tonight on Arena. Alan Gilsonen on his film Following a River's Route, Innie Kay on her songs of loss and love, and pianist Finian Collins on the glories of the keyboard. You can text us, as you can any night, please do, 51551. Our email address is arena@rte.ie, and you'll find us on Instagram at @RTE_arena. Irish singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist Innie Kay has released her fourth album, Still a Day. It follows on from 2022's Inian, which earned multiple RTE Folk Award nominations. Recorded in Dublin earlier this year, it features English and Irish language songs and explores themes of stillness, loss and renewal through voice, piano and fiddle. And Innie Kay, thanks for joining us on Arena tonight.
Thanks, Rick. It's lovely to be here.
I want to start by asking you about the title track, Still a Day. Can you talk to me a little bit about the inspiration behind that?
Well, I was up in the Tyrone Guthrie Centre. I was up there writing, and it was quite soon after a breakup that was, I suppose, deeply felt. And then I remember going down to the lake, the beautiful lake there that any artist that has been up there knows. And the lake kind of holds everything, you know, the deep lake water. And I remember going down, my head full of a lot of questions and lots of thoughts. It felt very loud. And I remember coming to the lake and it just being absolutely still. And kind of shockingly still, you know, compared to what was going on internally. And I remember it just really striking me, and the stillness being kind of still being a word that kind of means, I suppose, a few things in different contexts, and the stillness of the water, the stillness of the day, the evening, and it still being a day and me still being okay, even though I'd lost a lot or felt like, you know, a big change in my life. So I think it's a song really that just is about that aftermath of when life changes a lot, and stillness can kind of be something that's hard to find in those moments. And when I found it there, I remember going back to the piano and writing that feeling kind of very directly in this song and playing it for the other artists that were there that evening as a little sharing. And the words came kind of later then, but it seemed to become the core of the album then. And it just remained voice and piano, very, very simple.
It's a really interesting process, maybe for people who don't understand that when you go to the Tyrone Guthrie Centre and there are everybody there from musicians to writers, yeah, poets, visual artists, there's usually a point in the evening where everybody comes down and has dinner together. And then there is that sort of cross-pollination of people's work. Mm. Did you find that when you were there?
Absolutely, yeah. I was quite tender at the time. I remember I'm being so, it's very soon, you know, after heartache. And I remember just Bernadette Burns there, a wonderful big shout to Bernadette on Shirkin Island. She's a beautiful painter, and she just gave me a load of charcoal to go and, you know, sit in the corner of her studio and draw away for myself. And, you know, just that understanding of artists sharing each other's processes. And you can have all the time you like on your own, or you can join people for dinner later in the evening. And it's a wonderful place to go to.
And you're going to play that for us now.
Yeah. Thank you.
door slams open to the Not my way, not my will, not my way, not my will, even still, what a painting this closing day is before me. Still a day, bright line across dark waters, three crows fly, one long bird streams a bright line across dark waters, three crows fly. Following the circle moving out, rippling the water until it disappears again. Following the circle moving out, rippling the water
That's beautiful. That's Innie K, Still a Day, the title track from the new album, here live in the Arena studio. The recording process for the album itself with the producer Sean McErlane, how did that work out for you?
It was lovely. It was in February, over 10 days in Sean's gorgeous studio, Saula, in the back of his gaff up in Kimmage. So it's a very sunlit, lovely studio, which is quite different to a lot of studios. They're quite dungeony, but I quite love the light coming in, and all solar powered as well. So the whole album is solar powered, which is kind of cool. But yeah, it was 10 days, you know, not a whole lot of time, but enough time to kind of get stuck in. And it was really fun because it was mainly just me and Sean. And we were working really together well. And Sean wasn't having too much overthinking stuff, which is good for me. Just kind of kept the ball rolling. And we had Matthew Jacobson in on drums, who's just a wonderful musician and drummer. So it was just a really, really creative 10 days, which was a lovely start to the year. And then there's all the promotion. And then I'm delighted now to be playing again and, yeah, heading out on tour and all that. But, yeah.
Is this bit the hard bit in the middle? The making of the music is quite enjoyable, the actual playing of it, and then in the middle, the doldrums?
Exactly. And it all seems to be difficult enough, that part of it, I find. I think when I'm creating songs, I'm in it and it all makes sense. But then when you're kind of more and more, you know, seems to be speaking to a void, just a bit of disconnect, I feel like, in social media and everything, you're trying to get your word out, but so is a million other people. And, you know, so it's just that more direct people in a room, you know, at a gig that I live for, really. Yeah.
You're running singing workshops alongside some of the shows. Tell me about those.
In a few of the venues, yeah, I'm singing. I'm doing a workshop beforehand where people can come and learn a Shano song, and also because I teach Shano singing quite a lot in the Cobblestone. But as part of these workshops I'm doing, teaching an easy enough Shano song and then a song from the album that people can join the band and I on stage that night. So that's happening in a few of the dates in Kilkenny and the tea houses there. We'll be in Clears later, so people can come along to the tea houses earlier in the day. And in the dock, I'll be there earlier in the day as well, in the riverbank. And in the Mermaid and Bray, I'll be doing a workshop as well. So kind of a fun addition to the evening.
You mentioned that you were heartbroken when you went up to the Tyrone Guthrie Centre. Have you recovered? Do you have any tips for dealing with a broken heart?
It's not easy, is it? I mean, there's a million songs written about it, and you kind of feel cliche. But when it's your own experience, I think it's just so hard that you know what we all go through at times, different times in our lives. But I think the songs really, really helped. Yeah, it felt like the album was kind of helping me move through that whole process. And yeah, there's bits of things becoming lighter as I was writing. And there was one song in the beat when I was on a bus in Germany going from Leipzig to Berlin, and just looking out at the trees and the sense of movement, you know, sense of things always changing, that kind of gave great relief. And so I find the songs were real gifts to me, you know, the kind of magic of songs. So I'm really grateful for them, and just, yeah, for the muse of music.
You're the traditional artist in residence at UCC this year. What's that been like as an experience?
Oh, it's been so lovely down in UCC, up on Sunday as well. So they're kind of apart from the rest of the music departments up there on Sunday as well. I've been engaging with students and staff there and giving workshops and concerts and talks about what it's like to be a musician and all sorts of things. And it's been lovely. And then also just working on my own music as well. So it's been a delight, a real pleasure. I'll be there till the end of the year. Yeah.
Before I ask you to play something else from the album, I'm really interested in teaching people how to sing Shannos, and I know that you do it at the Cobblestone. How do you do that when you're starting with somebody who maybe has absolutely no basing in that or no grounding in it at all?
I don't know, but it works. Whatever. I don't know how to do it. You know, I think people are up for it, and if they're interested and they're up for doing a little bit of work if they've no Irish, but most people have a little bit of Irish. And, you know, we just start off with doing phrase by phrase and giving a bit of background on the song. And I think people kind of have a hunger for it more and more, to connect with the Shannos tradition and what we have here, you know. So I find when people are interested, it's easy. Yeah, it's quite enjoyable as well, singing in a group.
What sort of people are turning up to it?
All sorts, literally all sorts, all ages, adults, you know, because it's in the evenings and that. But people who are interested in improving their Irish, and people who are just wanting to learn a few songs to be able to sing at a party, or, you know, at their family member's wedding, or all sorts of reasons they might come. And it's lovely, just at 6 o'clock, we gather in the Cobblestone and sometimes sing in the front bar as well.
Before I ask you to play something else from the album, so you're about to go on the road, is that something that makes you nervous, or is it something you're really looking forward to?
Love it. I love performing, and I don't know, I'm not a super outgoing person, but I love being on stage, and it just kind of, it's where the magic happens. And yeah, I can't wait for it, actually. Yeah.
You're going to play Peppersome for us, and it's an instrumental piece, if I have that right. Explain to us where that comes from and what it's about.
It's really, I was, yeah, up in the Tyrone Guthrie Centre again, I was just literally wondering what would happen if I just played the fiddle and the voice and not really focus on lyrics much at all, but just whatever grief and loss was in me, not only with the heartache, but also what was going on in the world and feeling just the assault on humanity that was going on. Like, you know, it was just kind of starting off in Gaza, not starting off, but, you know, the recent part, and I was just feeling an awful lot of sadness, and it just kind of came out like this. Yeah. And Peppersome is a tune that is peppered a little bit throughout the album as well, so if people listen, they might hear parts of the tune in other songs. That's why we called it Peppersome.
Okay.
I'll have to move around a little bit.
This might be the perfect opportunity for me to tell people that they can see you in Cork in O'Riordan Hall on the 9th of October, on the 10th of October in the Sarah Walker Gallery in Castletown Bear, Levi's Bar in Cork on the 11th of October, Spirit Store in Dundalk on the 16th, Clears in Kilkenny on the 23rd, the Dock Arts Centre in Carrick and Shannon on the 24th, the Great Riverbank Arts Centre in Newbridge on October 30th, and finally finishing up in the Sugar Club in Dublin on the 6th of November.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My thanks, Innie Kay. The album is Still a Day, and you can catch her around the country for all of those live shows and those singing workshops. If you missed any of the details of those, you'll find the full details on the website, which is inniekay.com. That's INNIK.com. You're listening to Wednesday Night's Arena, and it is time for a reminder that next week, Thursday the 9th of October, we'll be at the Pavilion Theatre in Dunlira for a special event to mark the publication of the poems of Seamus Heaney. It includes all 12 of his poetry collections, as well as poems brought together for the first time from different journals and magazines, including Vogue and The New Yorker. I'm going to be joined on the night by poet Bernard O'Donoghue and Rosie Lavin of Trinity College, who edited this new edition of Heaney's work. The poets Moya Cannon and Victoria Kennefic will be there, as will commentator and critic Fintan O'Toole. In addition to all of this, we'll have music from Neil Martin and the piper Louise Mulcahy. If you'd like to join us on the night live in the room, I'm told there is a handful of tickets remaining. I was asked to emphasise a handful, so for more information, you can get those tickets at paviliontheatre.ie. But if you can't be there, of course, we'll be broadcasting the full live event that night, Thursday, the 9th of October. That's Thursday night of next week here on RTE Radio 1 from 7 o'clock. To whet your appetite a little, here is a clip of Seamus Heaney at a public event in 2009 introducing one of his favourite poems, Scaffolding.
I thought it would be improper not to read something from my very first book, The Day. And I thought one of the first poems I ever wrote, that's very confident and very innocent in all kinds of ways, and is used constantly for wedding presents. I mean, the number of times I get family requests or requests from school kids or people write this out, X or Y are getting married and they need a wedding present, you know. It's called Scaffolding. It's very open, it's very confident, and it was written to kind of clear up a row between Murray and myself years ago. It's called Scaffolding. Masons, when they start upon a building, are careful to test out the scaffolding. Make sure that planks won't slip at busy points. Secure all ladders, tighten bolted joints. And yet all this comes down when the job's done, showing off walls of sure and solid stone. So if, my dear, there sometimes seem to be old bridges breaking between you and me, never fear. We can let the scaffolds fall, confident that we have built our wall. Now, there's a lad entering the state of matrimony with a great ebullience.
That's the unmistakable voice of Seamus Heaney, and it's going to be an extraordinary night next Thursday here on Arena. Filmmaker Alan Gilsonen has long been inspired by the layers of memory and meaning that exist around us, whether it's from Bagot Street in Dublin, where he grew up, or the Glencree Valley in Wicklow, where he made his home. He's fascinated by the interplay of past and present, history and geography, folklore and art, memory and myth, landscape and wildlife. His new film, Riverine, will be shown as part of the Shaking Bog Festival in the Mermaid Theatre in Bray in County Wicklow later this month, followed by a discussion on the biodiversity crises facing all of us. I'm delighted now that Alan Gilsonen joins me from Brazil. Alan, what are you doing in Brazil?
Well, I'm on the beautiful island of Florianópolis off the coast of Brazil attending a conference. I'm here with Paul Muldoon talking all things Irish studies, and indeed we've just come from São Paulo, where there was an extraordinary festival of Irish language films, which packed out the Cinemateca. I was kind of delighted to see in the depths of Sao Paulo people queuing up to get into see Irish language cinema. So, yeah, real joy. Love this part of the world. And we're having a suitably good time.
I'm really interested in that, Alan. Why do you think that's the case, that Irish language cinema is packing them out in Sao Paulo?
I don't know. I mean, it's something we discussed last week. I think perhaps it's because there's something about making films in the Irish language that I think has liberated Irish cinema. I think, you know, that maybe there's a kind of more carefree, radical spirit. Those of us who make films in English mainly, like myself, you know, I always think we have somebody looking over our shoulder from America or from Britain. Whereas somehow I think the language frees the spirit a bit, I think. And you know, there was a lot of talk last week about this new wave of Irish language cinema, which is really something to see. So, and great to see it travelling as far as Latin America.
Okay. Talk to me a little bit about Riverine. Describe it to me. Give me an idea as to what people can expect if they come to the screening.
Well, I suppose it's a strange kind of poetic meditation on the valley in which I live, as you mentioned. Kind of emerged out of a broader project, the Shaking Bog Initiative, which is an initiative of my wife, Catherine Nunes, who's always been interested in the relationship between art and nature. And the Shaking Bog has been a festival and a podcast, but I think Catherine felt that she wanted to do something more organic. And on the other side of that, I'm somebody who, pompously talking to film students or on radio shows like this, always says, the story is on your doorstep. You know, you don't have to go to Brazil to look for a great story. And in a way, the film is about the place we live. It's about, as you said earlier, about the folklore, about the myth, about nature, about the stories, about the memories of our neighbours. And so I suppose Catherine forged this project called Riverscapes, which was to explore the kind of heritage and nature and memories of the Glencree Valley, which really stretches from the uplands of Wicklow at Glencree, right down through the valley, tracing the rivers through Enniskerry and on down to Bray, a place many people familiar with the area or Dubliners who go out for a day or a cycle on Sunday will know. And I think it came out of that belief, and I think you could mirror this in any community in Ireland, that actually I've often said that, say, documentary filmmaking is really about looking and listening. It's a very simple thing. And often we don't, in our kind of crazy lives, look and listen to the place we're in. So the film is kind of a reflection on that. It came out of the broader project of a series of events that has stretched from a beautiful dawn chorus walk in May, right up to a series of events the weekend after next, which brings the project to a conclusion. And the film is part of that, really.
Where do you begin the sketching out of a film of this nature? Where do you start? What's your initial starting point for it?
Well, I'm a great man for instinct. I don't have any. I think this applies to most films I've made. I have an instinct. I have a curiosity. I don't necessarily have a plan. Sometimes it can be frustrating for my colleagues. But with this, over the last 6 months, I suppose we have been talking to lots of people. As I say, stretching from Bray right up to Glencree, talking to neighbours, people that we know and love, but, stopping and listening to them and their stories, but also listening to the landscape, listening to the weather. I see there's storms forecast for tomorrow. And listening to the mythology, the folklore of our particular area. And as I say, I think you can find an equivalence for that in any area, even in a suburban area, and I think one of the things about COVID is that people discovered that maybe in their local park they were finding magical things. So the film is kind of, emerged from the broader project, and I hope it's a kind of a poetic meditation on the area. But really it's the people, it's the voices in it, it's the images in it, I hope. It's shot mainly in black and white. And there is, which I'm sort of thrilled about, a beautiful, I suppose, prose poem by Kerry Ní Dougherty, who I'm sure people will know from her extraordinary books, the memoir Thin Places and Cacophony of Bone. And I think Kerry is just somebody who touches nature beautifully, interprets it for us, not in a sentimental way, but in a really true way. And I suppose the whole Shaking Bog Initiative, such as it is to see how art can contribute to the wider conversation about the climate crisis, about the biodiversity crisis. And that's why, kind of following the screening in The Mermaid on Saturday week, there is a public conversation exploring, well, what can communities, we know on a global level what we need to do, and our leaders are sometimes slow to do that. But what can we in small communities across the country, what can we do, you know, without falling into despair? And there's a really, really interesting lineup of speakers who will contribute to a kind of public discussion after the film and The Mermaid. But also, you know, the film is part of a broader program. There's lots of other. Claire Keegan is there. Glenn Hansford is there. They're all sold out, I'm afraid. But Rosamund Taylor, a wonderful poet you, I'm sure, know, and Alton O'Brien, a musician from Clare, who are a new addition. And they're part of a really new, interesting, younger generation of artists, and I'm really excited to see them.
I'm interested in, and maybe I'm drawing a line here that doesn't necessarily exist, but I'm going to have a go at it anyway. Robert McFarlane is an interesting person to read. I read his book, Is a River Alive, earlier this year, and he talks about the idea that rivers have personalities and how important they are. What did you learn about the Dargle as you followed it from one end to the other?
Yeah, well, of course, I mean, Robert is, and his book is a complete masterpiece. And, you know, he's one of the inspirations for anybody working in this area. I suppose you're very aware that a river means different things. You know, if you're up in Glencree, it means something very different to the river that flows into Bray, say, by the estate in Fasteroe. But, you know, it has been a place of solace for people, a place where people in the past could fish, could play, could swim. But also, there's something of a river that it's like the spirit that flows through a town or a valley. It's ever-changing, sometimes a little frightening. You know, there's been substantial flooding over the years in Bray, so the river is also a threat, but it's also a wonder. And I think rivers, but nature in general, is a place that we often go in times of crisis or times of confusion, or simply for just the joy of it, to walk the dogs, as we often do. So I think, and I think Kerry puts her finger on this in her beautiful prose poem, you know, there is something healing about it, there's something powerful. It's hard to define, and yet when you're by it, you know it. And of course, you know, in the Glencree Valley, you know, it's a glacial valley. And so the river reminds us of that kind of shift of time over centuries.
It's also the literally a place of healing, because for people who maybe don't necessarily know the Glencree Valley, the Reconciliation Centre is there. And there's a German cemetery there where soldiers who ended up during the wars are buried. What is there anything that you think is healing about the landscape in and of itself that these things have found their way there?
I think absolutely. You know, and I think, you know, you mentioned the Reconciliation Centre, you know, and that was founded, you know, in a military barracks and all the history that entails, which was built during the United Irishman Rebellion, but also became a reformatory. So it's full of ghosts of darkness. But if you go up to Glencree now, apart from the German cemetery, which has its own poignancy, you know, the ghosts of airmen who were downed across Ireland during the Second World War. But below the reformatory and almost hidden, there is a beautiful grotto that seems to have been there forever. And it's by the river again. And one of the things that strikes me, and I was there very recently before I left for Brazil, is how vibrant, you know, there are endless photographs and candles and charms and, you know, and yet I've never seen anyone there, but it is, these are the places that people come to remember their dead, to perhaps pray or contemplate something else. And it's very powerful. I find the grotto particularly powerful simply because I never see anybody there, and yet it's always alive. It always changes. And that, it's no surprise, it's a very historic site, that it is on the side of this flowing river that flows down all the way to Bray Harbour.
Maybe just to try and tie some of this together, it's an interesting question that a lot of us have taken any sort of connection that we have to the natural world that would have been taken for granted by our parents or our grandparents or their parents, and we've lost it. Why is that so important?
I think if we're to have any hope for the planet, we have to restore our connection with nature. I think increasingly that's happening. There's all sorts of initiatives across the country where you can see in small pockets that's beginning to happen. I suppose maybe for too long we took nature for granted. And it's only now, perhaps, when nature is genuinely under threat. You know, we do, you know, without wanting to be a doommonger, we face a kind of existential threat. And I think somehow arts and artists, you know, it was lovely to hear Seamus Heaney read there. They're a way into nature, into understanding nature. You know, as Robert McFarlane does, as many other wonderful nature writers, Richard Nairn, of course, a wonderful Irish nature artist, writer who'd be speaking at the Shaking Bog, they kind of interpret it for us. And it's very interesting, you know, you'll know this, Rick, if you go into any bookshop, there's suddenly huge nature writing sections, you know, which certainly didn't exist 30 years ago. And I think that speaks of the hunger to understand nature, to connect with nature. And, you know, and these books, I think, are real inspiration to bring us back to nature, you know, and many of the guests that come to the Shaking Bog, people like poets like Alice Oswald, extraordinary, you know, John Lewis Temple, Liz Berry, the poet, Cuivino Rahala, these artists somehow open the door to nature. And I hope, you know, in some small way, the film does that. But also I hope, you know, the whole Shaking Bog project helps to do that in some modest way.
Alan Gilson, it's been a joy talking to you tonight. Thanks for joining us on Arena.
Thanks so much.
Riverine will be shown on October 10th at the Mermaid Arts Centre, followed by that public conversation about how the biodiversity crisis is being positively impacted by the collective effects of communities in Wicklow and further afield. You can have a look at the website. A lot of the events are sold out, but some are still with tickets available. Shakingbog.ie is the website for more details. The singer Ray will be stopping off in Ireland as part of her European tour next March. Here's Worth It by Ray. And that is Ray on Wednesday night's Arena. She plays the Three Arena in Dublin on March 4th and 5th. And those Ticketmaster tickets are available on their website, ticketmaster.ie. The different end of the musical scale. Music in Monkstown Festival returns to Monkstown Parish Church from tomorrow until October 5th. It features Irish and international classical musicians, including Ukrainian pianist Solomita Pivovar, and a closing performance of Messiaen's Quartet for the End of Time with Mia Cooper, Martin Johnson, John Finucane and Fergal Caulfield. The festival is curated by artistic director and classical pianist Finian Collins, who joins me now. Finian, thanks for joining us.
Well, good evening. I'm delighted to be here.
The concerts take place in Monkstown Parish Church. It's quite an intimate setting for concerts like this. Does that then have to influence your programming choices?
Well, I suppose compared to the Three Arena, any venue in Ireland is considered intimate. Would you believe that the Monkstown Church, and it's the Church of Ireland in the middle of the village there that we're talking about, if it's really packed, I'm told it can hold up to 1,000 people. But if you have 150 or 200 people, it also works extremely well, and it is a lovely intimate space. It manages to be both intimate and grand, and it's a fantastic building, and it has a lovely acoustic. Any decent programme of classical music will sound well in that space. And I've performed there a couple of times in the past, and it's always lovely to go back to that festival and to perform there for John Finucane, who is the artistic director of the festival.
Talk to me about the challenges about curating a festival that, by definition, probably has to appeal to both classical purists, people who know what they're talking about, but ideally attract some form of new audience as well.
Yes, that is always the challenge. And in fact, I've just come from the New Ross Piano Festival down in County Wexford, which where I am the artistic director, and it was our 19th festival. And it's always the challenge to put together programmes which will bring in new people, but also challenge people who are used to coming to concerts. So you always try to get a healthy mix of those two things. And the programmes that I'm doing in Monkstown at the weekend have that sort of mix. So there are pieces, there are contemporary pieces by Irish composers, Elaine Agnew, for example, and Rona Clark. But there's also nocturnes by Chopin, and there's Debussy, there's Poulenc. There's a great variety of composers who would be very well known. And then there are shorter pieces which may challenge and excite the curious listener.
So if you're going to make those comparisons between, let's say, the New Ross Piano Festival in Wexford, which people will know very well, and Music for Galway, which you're involved with also, is this quite different to them by definition?
Well, it's different. It's not in the sense that it's another festival. It's in a church. It's trying to do very similar things. It's in Dublin, which I think really marks it out, because I've often said that there are very few chamber music festivals in the greater Dublin area. You know, we have the National Concert Hall with the big orchestras and their chamber series there. But around the suburbs, there aren't that many festivals. I played at Castleknock earlier this year. But it's lovely to see beautiful suburbs and old suburbs of Dublin having their own thriving local scene. And the local community in Monkstown gets very involved in the festival. And actually, Monkstown happens to be one of my favourite parts of Dublin. If I had lots of money, I would live in Monkstown. It's just so beautiful. So I'm looking forward to performing out there.
It's always nice when we're allowed to visit.
Exactly.
Tell me about your own work and your own playing in particular. What sort of level of practice does that involve? What sort of level of playing every day, multiple times every day?
Yes, well, every day is a different day. That's the wonderful thing about being a performing concert pianist. And very much depends on the programmes coming up, the amount of repertoire coming up. I'm doing the Grieg Concerto with the RTE Concert Orchestra in 3 weeks on the 23rd. And before that, I'm doing a Mozart concerto in Switzerland. So I'm lining up repertoire and I'm planning the practice. I'm trying not to take on too much of different repertoire so that I can actually not have a crazy life. But every day there is, almost every day, depending on what you're doing travelling-wise or coming into interviews on the radio. But, you know, there's a lot of practice needs to be done in advance, and then a lot of practice needs to be done very close to the event as well to make sure that everything is on the boil. And then you've got to rehearse with the artists that you're playing with. So there's a lot of solo practice. And then, for example, in Monkstown, I'm playing with Gwendolyn Mason. Now, Gwendolyn, although she was brought up in Ireland, she lives in Switzerland, so she's only arriving in today. We start practicing together tomorrow. So that's put together quite tightly, and we have performed many of the pieces in the past together also. But, you know, there's all that different rate of preparation, some of it very slow burn and some of it very quick at the end.
I want to play some of the music that's going to be involved. So this Friday and Saturday night, you'll be playing some of those solo piano pieces with Gwendolyn Mason and John Finucane for some chamber works. Mm. But to talk about the solo pieces, maybe first, on Fridays, you're going to be playing three nocturnes from Chopin, some of my personal favourites.
They are some of my personal favourites. They are his Nocturnes, Opus 9. They're his first three nocturnes. They're absolutely beautiful pieces. The second one is extremely famous, actually. I once had it written to me on a Valentine's Day card when I was a teenager. But the first one is just hauntingly sad. The second one is this very famous expression of love, in my mind at least. And the third one is sort of a whimsical, half happy, half sad, light and shade sort of piece. They're just, you know, all amazingly beautiful lyrical pieces.
I think people will know it. Let's take a little of Chopin's Nocturne, Opus 9, number 1. That is Chopin's Nocturne, Opus 9, number 1. You're going to be playing some Debussy as well as Hommage à Haydn. We're going to play an extract in a moment. It's not something I'm really familiar with. Give us some context.
No, it's not a very often performed piece. It's a piece by Debussy, and it's called Homage to Haydn. And it was in the year of the centenary of the death of the great composer Joseph Haydn, so 1909. A French writer commissioned several of the great composers of the day, including Debussy, to write a short homage to Haydn. And they made a theme, a five-note theme, from the letters of his name, so from H-A-Y-D-N. And they had to use this theme in the piece, and very perspicacious listeners will hear a five-note theme reoccurring throughout the piece. It's only a short piece. It's sort of it's a waltz, but it's a very mysterious sort of a waltz. It's a quirky kind of a piece, and you can hear Debussy sort of having fun with that theme.
Okay, let's have a listen to that now. Conscious that as we're listening to that, we're both slightly lost, but perhaps you more than me, you seem elsewhere. What's going on in your head?
I'm closing my eyes and just listening back to that music and listening to the sound of the piano, the piano on which it's recorded, because it's from my new CD, which is a homage itself to Pleyel. And the piano is from 1937, so listeners might have noticed that the piano sounds a little bit different to the modern Steinway. It's a 1937 instrument which has been completely restored in Switzerland, where I recorded the CD. And yeah, every piece on the CD is linked to Pleyel, the great piano manufacturer.
Why is that piano so special?
Well, I just came across it in Switzerland about 3 years ago. I was asked to perform on it. It had just been restored and brought back to its glory, a beautiful 9-foot, a very, very big, beautiful mahogany brown concert grand piano. As I say, from 1937, I was asked to play on it, and I just kind of fell in love with the sound of it, and I thought, this needs to be heard. It's a different sound to what we often hear, almost always hear in the concert hall. And I devised a programme of pieces, including those Chopin nocturnes, of course, because Chopin loved Pleyel pianos, and he dedicated those nocturnes to the wife of Camille Pleyel of the Pleyel factory. So all the pieces on the disc are linked to Pleyel in some way, to the Pleyel family, to Pleyel the composer. And it's an interesting CD, I think, because it puts the piano front and center, the actual instrument. Normally, when I've made CDs, it's all about the music I've chosen, or, you know, wanting to show off me as an artist, if you like. Whereas this is really about showing off the piano as this particular piano as a very special instrument.
I want to make sure I get a reference into Saturday night's program, because there's some music from the Franco-Irish composer Joseph O'Kelly. Who is he?
And that's also very linked to Pleyel, because I did a bit of research into Pleyel, the great French piano manufacturer, and I discovered this composer who's completely forgotten. Joseph O'Kelly was actually a French composer. His father was Irish. He never came to Ireland. He spoke French, but he was aware, obviously, of his Irish heritage. He was probably called Joseph O'Kelly, you know, and there was no Joe. And he wrote a lot of beautiful salon pieces, which have now been completely forgotten. There's so much music out there that has just fallen by the wayside. And they're, you know, they're light-hearted pieces written for the grand Parisian salons of the 19th century. Very, very charming. And I learned two of them and put them on the CD.
I want to take one more piece maybe before we finish. Some of the concerts will have solo piano performances, and then you will have the chamber works.
Mm.
You're going to be playing Kachaturian?
That's
with
right.
them, the trio for clarinet, violin and piano. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So as well as playing several of the great 20th century violin sonatas with Gwendolyn, we're joining up with John Finucane, the festival's founder and artistic director, for this trio by Kachaturian, who's probably the greatest known Armenian composer. This piece was a student work written in the 1930s, and it's very lighthearted, it's very improvisatory, it's full of folksy tunes from Armenia, and it's actually very easy listening, very chilled.
Let's take a little piece of that. Thank you. slightly lost in that, which is that sounds fantastic. What? Tell me a little bit about what a life without music would be like.
It'd be unthinkable, impossible for me at least. Music has been with me since I was a toddler. So,
and do you ever feel music in a kind of form of synesthesia? Do you ever see it, feel it in colours, words?
Yeah, I do. I do. And I see every key. You know, we have all the different keys in music, and each one for me has a different sort of a colour or a different sound world. And yeah, I do. I see things and I hear things, and I live through music. So
it's been fantastic to talk to you tonight. Thanks for joining us.
You too, Rick. Thank you very much.
Arena. Finian Collins came in to tell us about the Music in Monkstown Festival. It takes place from tomorrow, October the 2nd to the 5th, and you can find out more details about all of the events involved at musicinmonkstown.ie. And that is pretty much it for the programme for tonight. Shana Gorman was our producer, researched tonight by Leah Murphy. Anna Rose Charlton was our broadcast coordinator. Paul Murnock was on sound. I'm Rick O'Shea, back with another Arena tomorrow night from 7 o'clock here on RTE Radio 1. And if you stick around after news, John Creedon will be live from Cork. I'll talk to you tomorrow.